Hello and welcome to another episode of the Make Me a Sense podcast, the show where we tell true life stories of people living with social issues and disabilities. And today, my guest is Suzanne Snow. She is the daughter of the LAPD detective who was murdered and ambushed and killed in a brutal way in October of 1985. It's been years since this happened. Suzanne is here to share her story and that of her family. I hope she will be able to get something from here. Suzanne, could you please introduce yourself in a more elaborate manner and then let's go through the events of that day. I mean, it must be traumatic, actually, having your father ambushed and killed.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for having me on your show. I will start off by saying that it's taken me all these years because I've done a lot of mental health work. I didn't write my book until I was 50 years old. So in hopes that it would help others in their healing journey from trauma. So my journey began when I was 17, and my dad and I were very, very close. My dad was the type of person where he was very present. So when you were with him, he always made you feel like you were the most important in the room. And with that, him being my best friend, he also was a Los Angeles police detective. And because he was a detective, I had a false sense of security because detectives go in after the fact and investigate. So they're less likely to be in harm's way.
Oh, they are always in harm's way, you know, because
they're
firing in line.
It's the
nature
for
of
sure.
Their job. Yeah.
Yeah. But he wasn't like on the streets patrolling and putting himself out there even more so. So he had testified the morning of October 31st, 1985, and it was Halloween. So the plan was that I wanted to go to a party. I was a teenager. I wanted to go to a party with my boyfriend, my friends, and because dad was the strict dad, aka strict cop dad, that morning said no. He said no, you know, it's a school night, not happening. And I was very tenacious. So the plan was that once my parents came home that night, I would do everything in my power to encourage them.
To convince them.
And convince them that I should go to this party. So I was home. I was getting ready for Halloween and my mom had been the first person to come in. My dad would leave the courthouse and then go pick up my brother from school. My mom came home and she was taking her costume off and I was in my room getting ready and the phone rang. And being a teenager, I thought, who's calling my parents? It's got to be for me, right? So I sprung out of my room and went and grabbed the phone. And it wasn't for me. It was a lady from my brother's school. And all she said was that there was a drive-by shooting and my dad was involved.
Oh, dear. In the school.
Yep. So I saw my mom come around the corner and I handed her the phone. As I was standing there, I was just kind of watching her to see if I could gauge like how bad this was. And I saw her kind of slump forward and her body language totally changed. And I knew it was bad. She got off the phone and she said, we're going to the school. So we jumped in the car and it was about a little under a 10 minute ride to the school. And neither one of us said a word to each other.
You wouldn't even know what to say, really.
We just didn't say anything. And I just sat in that chair just with a pit in my stomach because I knew it was bad. I just didn't know what I was going to see. For, you know, what I was going to learn. When we got to the school, there is the way that the school is set up is there's the front of the school, there's a parking lot in the middle of the school, and then the kids and after school programs get out on the backside of the school. So once we parked the car in the middle, we started heading towards the back of the school. And as we started to walk that way, we saw police officers coming towards us and they had tears in their eyes. We kept walking past them and I saw the sky's night was like lit up with all of the police lights from the cars and from an ambulance that was sitting still in the street. And my mom and I both, from the corner of our eye, caught a glimpse of my dad's truck. So we started running towards it. And as we got closer, we saw glass all over the ground. And as we kept going around the truck, that's where we saw him. And he was covered up, but it was him. My mom immediately started screaming and I stood in that street and I was not capable of like really grasping what I was seeing. And I kept fixating on that ambulance, thinking to myself, why aren't they helping him?
I'm so sorry you had to go through all that.
Oh, that must have
made you feel so vulnerable.
Very. Yeah. And it was very chaotic that night. Soon after that, we were escorted away by some police officers who were on scene and they brought us into an office inside the school. I sat down immediately just trying to like collect myself and my mom got escorted away. I didn't know where my brother was. I didn't know if he was hurt, nothing. I didn't know any of that. And as my mom got escorted away with these, what I believe were detectives who were wanting to talk to her. There were two ladies in the office and they were talking. I just sat and kind of listened to their conversation. And the one lady said to the other that unfortunately, Mr. Williams is deceased. And when that happened, it's like my world cracked in half because I felt the finality of it. I felt like he's not coming back. And I just wanted to run. I wanted to run as far as I could out of that room. The problem was, is that my body
refused to move.
It was, yeah. I felt like my legs were filled with cement. I couldn't move. And my mom came back into the room and she said, I'm sending you with a neighbor. And so part of me was like, okay, I wanted to run away from this situation as far as I could go and run away out of this nightmare that I was living. But at the same time, I felt like I needed to be with my family and I needed to be with my mom and my brother and just to know that I had this support system within us. But unfortunately, I didn't get that opportunity.
Oh, that's a shame. I mean, that's one thing you really, really need at that time. You need the family to pull together to be able to deal with the situation. It's not a pleasant situation. It's at its best. So you need all the support you could get.
Right.
Was there any offer to you?
Yeah. And I don't blame her. I mean, like I said, there was a lot of chaos that night.
I'm not talking about your mom.
Yeah.
Because your mom is actually processing the whole thing herself.
Right.
You
right.
are processing it in your own way. Your brother is dealing with it. But there should have been external support from probably the police system, the law enforcement systems, and every other system around you.
Yeah. And there wasn't. And part of that was between her not knowing what to do, right? Yes, she made that decision and there was ramifications to that. There was that feeling of me not feeling important enough in the dynamic because I was still a kid myself. And then I went with a neighbor, the poor neighbor. She had known my parents for a really long time. So for her, she was trying to process what was happening. I was beside myself. And at the time I was dating a guy who was 19 and we had been dating 3 months and all I wanted was him. I wanted her to call and get him over so that I had somebody. So she did. She called him. But when she called him, she didn't give him a lot of information. And so when he showed up at the door, his mindset was we were going to go to the hospital. He was going to take me and reunite me with my family.
Oh,
and as he stood at the door, the words could not come out of my mouth. I didn't want to say it. after he kept prodding me to go to the hospital, I finally just blurted out, he's not there. He's gone. And he said, what do you mean he's not there? And I said, he's gone. I watched him drop to his knees and he was visually upset. And we were both very upset and we were both kids and we were both trying to figure out how to navigate all of this. This is craziness. And I say this all the time. He was 19 years old. Like most boys would have said, bye. This is too much, but he stuck it out. And I think he stuck it out because he knew that my mom was going to kind of do her own thing. And I was going to be kind of left in the wings a little bit. And so it was a crazy time and it was very chaotic. My very quiet street turned into something that was, I don't wish on anyone. I had, my street was completely filled with police officers. Hmm. We had helicopters overhead. Unbeknownst to me, the man that was responsible, there was a threat to us, the family. And so we did not know that at the time. That came out later in trial and everything. But
was he ever apprehended?
It took them 6 days
to find him.
Yes. So for 6 days, I lived with police in front of the house and back of the house, helicopters, drive by. It was wild. I had bodyguards anywhere I needed to go. I had bodyguards with me. This story was so big at the time because it's the first time in the annals of Los Angeles Police Department that a police officer was actually assassinated. The media was also all over the place.
And so you don't even get privacy to deal with your grief. Yeah.
Nope.
That's another thing.
Yeah. And so it was just all these processes and all these things. And this was the 80s. In the 80s, there was no talk of mental health. There was no talk about, there was little known about PTSD.
Of course. And
there were no resources for kids, none.
And you would have been affected and the impact of that stays with you for a long time, if not dealt with, because, I mean, as they say, time heals all wounds. But I don't think time is alone to heal any wound.
It's time, but it's the work you have to put in. Exactly. And part of the conversation is that I want people to understand that even though you don't have all of the resources around you, and I didn't know this because I was a kid and I was not able to verbalize all the things that were going on with me. And initially, obviously, I was in shock. And so when you have a loss like that, you go into a fog. And I lived in a fog. I didn't sleep. I had sleep deprivation horribly. That affects your mental health. I had anxiety and panic attacks because my safety net father is now gone.
Yeah.
I was struggling with the relationship with my mother prior to his death. And now afterwards, it was like, oh, great. Now what am I going to do? And so there were a lot of facets that were going on. And I also was very complacent. Like, you just told me where to go and pushed me in that direction. And that's where I went.
Yeah.
So when my mom came to me and said, LAPD is going to pay for us to have.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Then get a juicy frozen grade A Kroger turkey for 49 cents a pound. Limit one with a $25 additional purchase with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico. How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Therapy. At first, I didn't even know what therapy was.
Yes, exactly.
I thought, well, if you have to go see that kind of doctor, you're crazy. But because I did what everybody was telling me to do, I said, okay, I'll go. And I met with this gentleman. In hindsight, I think the issue with him was that he was not educated in trauma. And so because he wasn't educated in trauma, I feel like that's the reason why he kept our sessions very, very shallow, very general. Yeah. So it was talking about my relationship with my mom, my brother, which my brother was safe physically. Hmm. My dad saved his life. He was fine physically. Obviously, at a six-year-old, he was dealing with his own repercussions of his experience. But
so this man, how long did these therapies go on for?
1 year. And every session I kept saying to myself, today's the day he's going to help me. Today's the day he's going to make me feel better. And it wasn't happening. And at this point, now I'm like dealing with not only just the depression, I've got suicidal ideation. I want to be with my dad.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to verbalize that. And so an entire year I saw him. And at the end of the year, he said to me, "Susan, you were a well-rounded young lady and that you're going to be fine for the rest of your life.
At 18.
I don't need to see you anymore."
Oh my God.
And 18. I thought, okay, this is awesome. So even a professional can't help me. And that means I've cracked. I'm crazy. There's something really wrong with me, right? I'm just going to have to live with this for the rest of my life. I'm just going to have to live like this.
So how did you get out of that headspace?
Well, it took 14 years. I lived in fight or flight. I didn't know it was fight or flight. I just knew that I talk about the emotional mask. Mm. Because in the very beginning, people would say things to me like, "You're so strong. You're so brave. You're going to be fine. You're a kid. Kids bounce back, blah, blah, blah," right? So that was the mask I wore. Anytime anything triggered me, I would put that emotional mask on. Now, inside, I was a turmoil mess, right? Mm. But nobody saw it. Mm. Nobody saw it. And I lived like this for 14 years.
Oh, wow. And what were those things that you did in that 14 years? Oh my God, I can imagine, you know, losing your father figure, your authority figure, someone you love so dearly, someone you're so close to, and then nobody's there to even talk about it. They just telling you, you are strong.
Yeah.
You're breaking up on the inside. You are crumbling.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And, you know, the only people, and I didn't even let, like, even my, I married that boyfriend. Mm-hmm. He and I are still together, but, and we've gone through a lot. You know, he went through trauma too.
For that.
Thank you. He went through trauma too. I mean, this is his journey as much as it is mine. So I think if it wasn't for him, honestly, like, he knows me better than I know myself and always has. Honestly, I think that if I didn't have him, at least him, in the very beginning, I don't know where I would be.
So it was your major support.
Yeah, I had him.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and my friends, they struggled because, like, this is huge. And
because
nobody
they don't
knew,
understand as well. They don't
nobody
know
what
it.
To say. Yes. Really? And a lot of my friends loved my dad. So it was just very, very difficult. And then as time went on and I married the boyfriend and we had two kids, we decided to move from Southern California to Colorado, which is where I am now. We moved here in 1997, and my whole thing about moving out of Southern California was nobody knew who I was. Nobody knew my story. And I felt like I could just pretend, not that it didn't happen, but just like compartmentalize that part of my life.
Yeah.
I was working as a hairdresser.
Was that your solution? I mean, your problem.
That was my solution.
The problem at hand.
The problem is, just get out of here. Yeah. The problem is that you can leave your geographic area, but your issues are going to come with you.
Exactly,
right?
Because they're in your mind. They're in your body. They're in your thoughts.
Yeah.
Every day you go in, you go to bed with them, you wake up with them, even though you are 1,000 miles away from where the issue is, you're still the same person.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And so I was working as a hairdresser at the time, and I was working in a salon that was kind of close to Littleton, Colorado. And April 20th of 1999, I was working that day, and I had taken a break and went into the back room, and I turned on the TV that was back there, and up popped the coverage of the Columbine High School shootings. I stood and I watched the TV, and I started having flashbacks of the night my dad was killed. I felt the tingling in my fingers. I knew what that meant. I was going into a panic attack. I turned white, and my coworkers don't know my story. So they're watching this visceral reaction I'm having, and they're not understanding where it's coming from. And because clearly I'm not old enough to have kids in high school, and I didn't live anywhere near that area. So they were totally confused. And so was I, because remember, I was told I was going to be fine for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I kind of got myself together because I had to go do my clients for the rest of the day, put on my emotional mask, put it on. Everybody around me was totally upset that day, but I was like, this isn't affecting me. I'm going to be fine. You know, that kind of thing. So I finished my day like nothing happened. And I walked through the door to go home, and everything came flooding back.
Oh, dear.
All of those old emotions came flooding back, and I started to spiral, mentally spiral. I tried to hide it from my husband, but he's a smart man. And 2 days later, he met me at the door. He said, "You have two choices. You either get help or I am going to put you in a hospital."
Oh, dear. So from that, you talked about writing your book.
Yeah.
What was the main lessons you learned through your grief that you wanted to pass on to your readers?
A couple of things. I finally, in that pivotal point, found a therapist that really knew where I was coming from, who told me in the first 3 minutes of meeting her and telling her everything, that everything I'd been through was normal because I had PTSD. And it was the first time I had ever heard that word, PTSD, in my situation. And I was confused because I thought it was, you know, war. And she said, no, anyone who goes through anything traumatic can have PTSD. But what you need to know is that it doesn't go away. It's something you learn to manage. And that was huge for me because now I had hope. Now I had someone that I felt vulnerable enough with that I knew that she was going to be able to guide me.
Yeah.
And so that's what I wanted to do for my readers. I wanted them to know that they weren't alone, that how they were feeling was normal, that they weren't crazy, and that they can find the modalities with a professional who understands, who is trauma competent. Not just informed, but competent, that knows your type of trauma and is able to guide you in the modalities that are going to help you heal.
Yeah. And that's so important because until you deal with the trauma, you can't live your life normal anymore. So it's great that you found someone who understood the trauma and actually helped you through that. But also, what's your thought about the gun license thing? Because a lot of families go through similar issues to you in the US. People being gunned down randomly, even we hear of people going to schools and shooting down people in the school, shooting students randomly. That happens a lot. So what's your thought about gun license in that?
Well, I try to get out, I try to stay out of the political world just because my focus is fully into the mental part of it. Hurt people, that's what I'm going to say,
yeah.
Right? If we don't address what's going on with the person that wants to hurt other people, yeah. Gun licensing laws and all that stuff, that's another issue. There's multiple issues. It's very complicated. But I will say that the most important message that I'm putting out is to heal yourself from your trauma that you've gone through, because if you don't, it can lead to different mental illnesses and mentalities. And so for me, it's my message is to go down the road of being a victim. And in your mind, if you truly want to heal, that's a survivor mentality. You are a survivor. You are taking your power back from the thing that hurt you the most.
Thank you so much for that. And you have talked about the book. What is this book called and where can listeners find it?
My book is called The Other Side of the Gun, My Journey from Trauma to Resiliency. It is available on Amazon right now. You can either get a paperback form or you can do the Kindle. If you're Kindle Unlimited, you can read it for free. I am open to talking to anyone who needs an ear.
Oh, thank you so much for that. I mean, because a lot of people don't even reach out when they need help. So,
oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If you are just sitting there and you're listening to this and you feel like you need a little bit of hope, you need someone to listen, to hear you, to be heard is really important. And so I do have Instagram and it's Susan_Snow1 is my Instagram. And then I do have a website and it's SusanSnowSpeaks.com. You can contact me through there. It has information around my book. I am a speaker. I'm an international speaker. I'm just trying to get my message out to as many people as I can and help as many people as I can. So,
oh, thank you so much. And this podcast is going to be on all podcast platforms. So please subscribe. It's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google, and everywhere you're listening to your podcast. So please subscribe to us on Apple and on Spotify. We also need sponsors, so please, if you are able to sponsor us, we welcome you. And thank you so much for sharing your story. I know it's been a bit emotional for you, because every time this you have to talk about this, no matter how many times you talk about it, it's going to bring the same emotion back to you.
Oh, absolutely.
So I understand, and I really appreciate you coming on, and I hope we'll be able to talk more in the future. And it's been a great time speaking to you.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope that someone out there is hearing this and finds a little bit of hope in my message.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
A big thank you to all our listeners who have been sending us messages through the message link. I would like to thank everyone who has listened in so far and contributed to this podcast. Thank you so much. We couldn't have done anything without you. Keep listening, keep sharing, keep downloading, and keep liking. Thank you again.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Then get a juicy frozen grade A Kroger turkey for 49 cents a pound. Limit one with a $25 additional purchase with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
How do you feel when you switch to GEICO and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with GEICO feels just like that. Get more with GEICO.